Simple Direct Media Layer is, let me start over. my name is Sam Lantinga. I'm the lead programmer for Loki Entertainment Software. We're a game company that's porting games from the PC and Mac to Linux. And one of the toolkits we're using is SDL. And SDL is a free cross-platform game library. It's really for all kinds of multimedia applications, but we're using it for games. And this is sort of a general introduction on how to use SDL for doing game porting or, you know, whatever else you want to do. So basically, let me tell you what it is. This introduction, by the way, is available online at that webpage, www.devolution.com. And SDL is completely cross-platform. It's used for our different kinds of games. There's a really long list here. Descent, Doom, Hexen, Maelstrom, these are classics. Some commercial games that people have done are Hopkins FBI. It's sort of a point-and-click adventure game. Loki Entertainment's working on Civilization: Call to Power, Myth 2, Soul Blighter. I'm looking back at the screen because I don't have any VGA output here. Railroad Tycoon 2, and then there have been a bunch of independent projects, people just writing games for Linux, and, well, most of them are for Linux. There are, Billy the Kid is for Windows, but Bump Racer, Jump, uClient is an Ultima Online client. I don't know if you guys have heard of it. Ultima Online, they've got a Linux client. There's also sort of a free project to develop an Ultima Online clone, and this is a client for that. In addition to games, there's also work going on for game SDKs. A lot of you have heard of ClanLib. These are just sort of independent projects that people are using to put a sort of a high-level wrapper on the SDL low-level multimedia functions. So emulators. One of the things that got me started on SDL was porting the Macintosh emulator executor to Windows Win32. And I was looking at the way the directory structure was laid out. There was a front end basically for each, you know, glibc, glibc 2.1, X11, SVGA-lib, you know, DGA, Win32. You know, every platform had its own. A special way of accessing input and graphics and sound and so forth. So SDL was meant to be just sort of a thin, very simple, get as close to the hardware kind of layer to abstract the way to access the hardware. It's also used, I haven't tested this out, but apparently there's a Sega Genesis emulator that uses SDL. I want to get some ROMs and check it out. There are some demos available online. The group Q Corporation put together some demos, Hellizer and Crash. I'll demo one of them later. Loop, I don't know how many of you are in the demo scene, but that's a fairly prominent Linux-based demo. And then there's multimedia applications. MPEG TV is based out of San Francisco. They're a commercial MPEG player that's using SDL for full-screen video under Linux. SMPEG is a project that we're working on at Loki, and that's also an MPEG player. It played the video you saw earlier at the beginning of the talk. Okay, I've told you a little bit about what it can do, but here's a more comprehensive list. It provides video services, events, audio, CD-ROM audio. CD-ROM audio is sort of a separate sort of thing. It's not really part of the SDL simple API, but it's very useful for games that use CD audio. Eventually, there's been a lot of requests for MIDI support, and MIDI might go in along the same lines. Multi-threading support, very simple Threads API. There's some simple timer stuff. It's all the thrust of Simple Direct Media Layer is just keep it simple, keep it fast, keep it multi-platform. Any independence. Anyone who's tried to port any kind of software to PowerPC or ARM or Alpha knows that Indian independence is very important. Let me go back and talk about the video a little bit. That's one of the largest portions of STL. STL provides an arbitrary frame buffer interface. Basically, you set the video mode and you write directly to video memory. Of course, we know that under X11, you generally can't do that. Under Windows GDI, you can't do that. So STL provides a way to just automatically convert from whatever your current video mode is to whatever video mode you want. Or you can ask it to, say I want to do palette tricks, and you're running on a 16-bit X display. Well, you can't switch X to 8-bit yet. That's maybe coming with X386 4.0. But STL allows you to set an 8-bit video mode and do all your palette tricks, and then it converts on the fly. You can also create off-screen surfaces. You can write directly to the video memory and do your own surface management. Or you can allow STL to create surfaces that have color key blitting, alpha blending. Color key blitting is like the sprites, transparency in the background. Alpha blending allows you to sort of fade between one image to another, and I'll show a quick demo of that later if you want. On platforms that support it, DirectX is one of the only ones right now. Hardware acceleration is supported. I have high hopes for X386 4.0. Should enable dynamic mode switching, dynamic depth switching, and hardware acceleration. Along with video, you need events. You need most games use keyboard input and mouse input. There are some games that use joystick input, but that hasn't been demanded enough that I've put it in yet. STL has a very nice event model. What happens is it pulls the system event queue for events, and then it takes each one, whether it be a quit event, window close, or keyboard event, or mouse event, and it passes it through a filter function. And you can decide whether or not to queue that event into the internal event queue. So you can do direct, as soon as a keyboard event comes, your filter function gets that keyboard event. And you can do translation on it, you can do whatever. And then after you've filtered that, it'll go into the STL event queue. And then the normal event functions like wait event, pull event, whatever you can use to retrieve that. The latest version of STL provides the STL peep events, which is much like the familiar, let's look at the queue for a certain type of event function, with one interesting exception. This function is thread safe. So if you wanted to write code that, did all your graphics display and wanted to do the mouse update in a separate thread, you could use STL peep events combined with a feature I'll show you later to have flawless mouse movement while you're doing game loading or whatever. And that's a feature that CivCTP uses. The audio features of STL are designed for building your own custom mixers. STL provides a mixer in the example library, and you can use that. But if you want to do special software mixing like panning or zoom reverb or anything like that in real time, you can do that using the callback functions for STL audio. You can set playback any of the common audio formats, 8-bit, 16-bit. Doesn't support floating point audio, but most games don't use that. And it's designed so that you open the audio device, you set the audio format, set your callback, and then whenever the audio device needs audio data, it'll call your callback. So you don't have to sit there and feed the audio device. You don't have to keep track of how much time is going to be needed for the next event update or whatever. You can just set your event queue and then feed the audio device. This is really useful because it's the way audio is implemented on some of the other operating systems. Mac OS, for example, uses a callback interface. BOS uses a callback interface. And with multi-threading on Windows and Linux, you can get really nice, fast, responsive audio. CD-ROM audio API I'll go over it a little bit later. Thread functions are very simple. You create a thread. You provide mutex locking. You wait for a thread to exit. That's all that most game applications have needed. So that's what I've provided. Interestingly enough, pthreads, which is the base for the Linux version of STL's threads, do not have anything besides binary semaphores. So if you wanted to implement like a counting semaphore or a queue, you might have to use System 5 APIs. But generally, you can get by with just binary semaphores. Timers, very simple. How many milliseconds have elapsed? Set me a single timer callback. Very simple. Okay, so now that's sort of an overview of what's provided by STL, let's see how these things are implemented on the various systems. Under Linux, use X11 for video. There have been several people who've wanted full screen APIs, but the fact is that none of the current full screen APIs are very mature. They either don't support enough cards or aren't stable enough on all cards or anything. So probably what's going to happen is you're going to find a plethora of different low-level drivers, FBCON, SVGA-lib, GGI, for STL. And then, you know, as each one matures, the one that's the most popular and the strongest stability-wise will win. Use the OSS API for sound. I believe that there are two major sound APIs on Linux. There's ALSA and there's OSS. And I've decided to go with OSS because the ALSA sound API supports the OSS API and ALSA doesn't have support for a lot of cards at this point. So there are two different ways that threads are implemented. You can either use a clone system call for libc5 systems. I don't really recommend it because there are weird X11 interactions with threading. I've managed to get rid of most of them, but there are still a few little bugs hanging around. Or on glibc 2.0 and 2.1, it uses the pthreads Linux threads interface. Win32, I'm assuming most of you don't care much about that. If you care, it uses GDI. There are two different libraries. There's one for GDI, which runs on all systems, NT95, Windows CE, maybe. There's DirectX, which uses direct sign and direct draw for acceleration. Sure.
Are you talking about writing code that uses the direct media layer, or are you talking about implementing the direct media layer?
This is the way the direct media layer is implemented on these different systems.
Okay, so
you don't have to touch any of this API stuff.
So which kind of thread it's invoking is
completely transparent.
Okay.
No, this is just sort of, this is the way the things are implemented. The API is completely consistent and works on all of those without any changes. Sure.
What sort of threads are you using in Win32?
The Win32 threads, create thread. On BOS is a threaded operating system. You get threads for free. It uses B window for video display and the B sound player API, which is callback-based, as I mentioned, is used for audio. These tips, these are things that people have run across. Different ways to leverage the STL API to make really good applications. Things that you might want to do that are unusual, you can see how to do some of them in the tips. For example, here, Linux and BOS support the STL event thread flag. I'm going to talk about STL init later. Basically, it just loads the libraries. But you need to pass STL init event thread in order to get multi-threading events for the moving the mouse when the application isn't responsive and that sort of thing. There are some other unofficial ports, Solaris, Irix, FreeBSD. They all mostly work on those platforms. There are things like CD-ROM. The CD-ROM drivers might not be completely implemented, or you know, FreeBSD has problems. It doesn't support the pthread cancel call. But those are mostly functional. macOS port is in progress. It's kind of interesting how much resurgent interest in macOS there's been since macOS 10. But there's some people working on sound. Right now, graphics and events work. That's kind of interesting to watch that bloom. Okay. So now you know what it is, sort of basically how it's implemented, what services it uses. Now I'm going to tell you a little bit more about how to use it from the ground up. STL is a dynamically loaded library, which means that if you're running in a full screen environment, it'll detect that and load the proper library. If you're running in an X11, it'll load the X11 libraries. So the STL init call loads the libraries and initializes the various subsystems that you want to use. The reason why I have separate flags is because not everyone wants CD-ROM support. You know, the CD-ROM driver, when it loads, it scans the system for CD-ROMs. You don't necessarily want to have that overhead or even want to have that show up on your S-trace. But you pass in the flags that you want, and when you're all done with STL, you call STL quit to clean everything up. You can, a lot of people have asked, you know, they're building professional applications. They don't want to rely on the library being loaded. They don't want to necessarily overwrite a previous installation of STL on the systems that they're running on. So what they do oftentimes is include STL with their application and in a little subdirectory. This is a tip over here. This is how you can enable that, searching for it in a separate library location. By default, it looks in the standard library locations, user local lib, user lib, slash lib for the libraries. But you can use a different directory if you want. Here's an example.
Relatively simple, as you can see. Just init, if you can't init, and there's a library function called stlgetError. This get error message, this error message API, I expect to change over the next, you know, before I hit 1.0. The main reason stl hasn't hit 1.0 is because I want internationalized error messages and thread safe error handling. Right now, neither of those are available. But as you can see, it's really simple. I've used the app ncc at exit call, so whenever you call exit, you don't even have to worry about cleaning up STL, it's just automatically cleaned up for you. And now we can get on to the real business of writing something cool. Choosing and setting the video mode. Figure out what video depths your application supports, 16-bit, 24-bit, 32-bit, you know, whatever. And you can set whatever video mode you want. If the native hardware doesn't support it, for example, DGA, they're only allowed you to use the video modes that are in the XF86 config. STL will center and offset your video modes and render a black background. So, you know, if you want 300 by 200 on a 640x480 screen, it'll center it, and, you know, to you it's just a 300 by 200 video mode. If you support various resolutions, choose your bit depth that you support and call list STL list video modes, and that'll tell you what actual video modes are supported at the various bit depth. And here's an example of setting the video mode. That easy. The STL set video mode returns a screen surface. A surface contains information about the video pixel format. It contains a pointer to the screen, to the pixels, the frame buffer. And once you set the video mode, you can use the screen surface any way you like. Here's a portable way of drawing to the frame buffer. This works on every supported platform, every supported bit depth, all the really weird things that happen. You can draw using this. If, for example, on DirectX, you need to lock the frame buffer because the video memory may not be available, the macro STL must lock returns true if you need to lock the screen. This is also true in DGA. For example, if your screen is offset, the lock needs to offset the frame buffer memory for you. And that's done there. Then you can check what format the screen is in. You know, if you already set a particular format, you don't need to worry about this, but for complete portability and the maximum speed, this is the way to do it. And the examples are all in the proceedings, so you don't need to scan them very hard. There you go. Drawing a pixel. Loading and displaying images. Say you have a artwork in some format. STL provides a couple of loading functions. Load BMP, because BMP is the most common graphics format used by graphics editors. Load WAVE, because pretty much everyone has access to the WAV format. It broke. Oh, okay. Testing? No, it's on. Testing? Loading images. STL provides an image loading library. It's in the example demos, but it's not part of the core library itself. I'm trying to keep that as minimal as possible. But if you have your own graphics images, loading and displaying them is really easy. That's it. You load it, you put it to the screen, and you update the rectangle that changed. You can also set, if you have sprites, you can set color keys so that you have transparent background. If you have the alpha blending, you can set that as well. Let me show you a quick example of alpha blending in action. It's a slow process, but it's really interesting to watch. Carefully, you'll see that the smiley face in the middle of the screen is fading out. It's doing by an iterative process of just changing the alpha value and then re-gridding the sprite. Here's the spotlight. And that's implemented as a square sprite with varying alpha transparency over the entire sprite. And here's one way you can implement a brush in a painting program or something like that. Okay, that's alpha blending.
Whenever you're ready.
Sorry about that. Oh, no problem. Thanks.
Testing?
Okay.
Yeah. Pardon me?
Instead
of 640 by 480, it'll be running in 480 by 640. Absolutely. If it's not supported, you'll get the next largest video mode and you'll be centered.
No, but let's say your load, will the image be rotated accordingly?
No, I see what you're saying. No, the image wouldn't be rotated, but it's clipped so that, you know, if it doesn't fit onto the screen, it'll be clipped so that the image that does fits on there. And if it was rotated, you'd have to implement that yourself. STL only provides color key alpha blending and straight blitting. If any rotation, shearing, anything like that needs to be implemented yourself.
Does your update rex call simply update a list of dirty rectangles, or does it actually immediately update that rectangle?
You pass it an update. You pass it a list of dirty rectangles. You have to keep track of the dirty rectangles yourself. This allows you to do optimization. As far as you know, what you know has changed, what needs to be updated. If you're writing directly to video memory, that's not necessary. But most of the time when you're writing an application, you're not writing directly to video memory. And I'll talk a little bit more about that later if you're interested.
Does it flush the dirty rectangle queue?
There is no dirty rectangle queue. It just updates those rectangles at that time. And as soon as that call returns, your changes are updated, are visible. OK. Events. I've talked a little bit about events. One of the neat things about STL is it provides international keyboard support on all supported operating systems. If you want to enable that, because there's some processing overhead with it, sometimes you have to go out to a translation server or you have to do complicated table lookup. You can enable it using the enable in Unicode. You can turn that on and off. You know, as your application goes to text mode or dialog box, you can turn it on. When it goes back to you know, fast action, you can turn that off again. You can wait for events. Here's an example of that. You can poll for events. Here's an example of that. The polling returns immediately. Waiting waits infinitely. The peep events allows you to do basically anything you want. You can pull off events, you can peek, you can put events onto the queue, you can do pretty much anything with the peep events function. And, you know, if you're not interested in event queue, you can have your filter function, or you can just keep the event queue flowing by calling SDL pump events, and just check the state. You know, if you want to know if the mouse is in a particular place, if you want to know if a keyboard key is pressed, there are functions for each of those event types, and you just call those to find out what's going on. You know, if you want to check for the escape key, you call SDL get key state, and just check the particular element of that array. Here's a way to check to see if the mouse is over a particular area, in this case over the upper left-hand corner of the screen. This can be implemented, this can be useful for implementing, you know, menu lists that light up as the mouse passes over them and so forth. And there's a lot more to it. There's a lot of you know, event functions, but that's the general gist of it. Any questions on events or video? Okay, audio. I've described audio before. It's a callback interface. One of the interesting things is once you've opened the audio device, you may not necessarily be ready to feed audio to the sound card. So once you've opened it, you have to call pause audio so that the audio device actually starts calling your callback. And here's an example of a sample callback mixing routine. This is just opening the audio device. You set the frequency, you set the format, you know, you can, SDL supports mono and stereo, and you just open it and close it. Just as simple as setting the video mode. And here's a corresponding example for blitting a surface. You know, say you have a WAV file, you want to quickly write a function to mix various WAV files. Here's your basic mixer. The mixing callback, mix audio, goes through each of the sounds and mixes them into the output stream. And the play sound function just loads the WAV, converts it to the audio format, and adds it to the queue. It's that simple. That's code using the APIs. You can write that yourself or use the examples. CD-ROM audios, very much like any other CD-ROM audio API. You know, you can do anything. You can eject, you can see the status, you can play X number of tracks, you can seek to the end, you can get the table of contents. You can even implement a CDDB client using the SDL audio API. And here you go. This tells you how many drives there are. You open it, you close it. You know, you play the tracks. I don't have an example of playing the tracks. Okay, well, that's the function, SDL CD play tracks. You can play offsets or whatever. Those of you who are familiar with the CD-ROM format, the CD-ROM actually has translates the play request into from minutes, seconds, frames to raw frames. And that can be any offset on the CD. So SDL uses the raw frames. You can convert from minutes and seconds to frames and vice versa using the macros, frames to MSF and MSF to frames. There are also, you know, CDs have different data tracks, audio tracks. You can tell after you've loaded the CD-ROM, which track is an audio track, which track is a data track, etc. It's fairly complete, but not useful unless you need to do some specialized audio using the CD-ROM. Threads. Create thread. Not a whole lot to it. When the function returns, your thread function is running. You pass it a function that runs as your thread. When that function returns, your thread is done. It returns a status, so you can wait for the status of your thread. You can pass a parameter to it. You know, if you have a pointer on the stack, you can pass it to your thread and modify values on the stack. And here's an example of creating a thread. It doesn't do a whole lot. You just create it, change the value, and then the thread runs in the background, looking to see if the global data value has changed. And notice it's using the SDL delay. That's the timer function that waits a little bit. It's very important when doing multi-threaded code is putting in delays, because what happens on a lot of operating systems, is Linux included, is that the scheduler will run your thread to the, not to the exclusion, but other threads, other processes on the system won't be as responsive as you necessarily want them to be. So to yield the CPU to other threads, use the delay function. And then when it's done, it just sets the global flag telling the thread to quit and waits for it to finish. Now, threads aren't a whole very useful unless you can synchronize access to data used by more than one thread. That's I use the traditional finish P and V calls to for the mutexes. You know, P is lock, V is unlock, and all you do is just lock your resource, unlock it when you're done. And as I was writing the example, somehow I had an image of a whole bunch of kids trying to use the bathroom. So you got a bunch of kids trying to use the potty. And then when it's done, it sets the global flag and waits for all the kids to finish using the potty. This is extendable to a lot of other applications where, you know, you have any kind of parallel processing applications. You can use the same sort of idea to do synchronized access to the global data. It's used a lot in mathematical processing as well. Not that there are any mathematical applications using SDL. Timer functions, it's really simple. Get the ticks. Wait for a little while. Here's an often used game loop. While the game is running, update the game state and wait until the next frame. It's very simple to do. Get the ticks. See if the current time is less than the next time you want to update your frame. If it is, wait a little while. If not, immediately update your next frame. Sure.
I'm sorry, how did you implement the timers in Max?
These functions, there are actually three timer functions. There's a SDL delay, SDL get ticks, and set timer. Set timer is used by the set iTimer, which isn't thread safe, but it does, and that's why it's not thread safe. The other functions, delay uses select for the fastest, most portable delay. Get ticks uses get time of day. Something that you might want to know, this is not specified by the API, but really useful to know if you're writing an application. Most operating systems have a scheduled time slice of 10 milliseconds. So if you want to give up your time slice, something that you can do is SDL delay 1. And that'll just give up your CPU for the next, you know, 1 millisecond or the rest of your time slice, whichever is longer. This is used in a lot of, like, the audio. It's not actually used in the audio. It's used in threads that update things continuously, like event polling and so forth. It's used often there. Any other questions on threads? Okay. How am I doing on time?
36 minutes.
Okay. Indian independence. Normally, I wouldn't even touch on this, except Linux games are, by their very nature, run on multiple architectures. One of the biggest, there are several issues that you need to worry about when you're writing games for multiple architectures. The size of the data types is a big one, and Indian independence is another big one. This is the difference between Indian independence. It's the way the data is laid out in memory. So you've got little Indian systems. How many of you are familiar with Indianness? Okay, pretty much everyone. Basically, the high bytes are arranged. You have a word, and the high bytes are here. Low bits are here, and the word is represented in memory as an array of bytes, and the ordering in which they're done depends on the big Indian and little Indianness of your system. SDL provides macros defining the Indianness of the system. Byte order is little Indian or big Indian. and defines macros that allow you to swap data based on which endianness you're in. So if you want to load data files that are a little endian on a Power PC, just use functions that are provided to load and swap. You know, here's an example. You say you're reading 16-bit pixel data. Pixels, 16-bit pixels are represented as 16-bit unsigned short values. These need to be byte swapped on machines of different endianness. This shows you one way of loading a scan line and swapping on a big endian machine if your data is little endian. As you see, just read it, check it, swap. So that's sort of a broad overview of the API and sort of examples on how to use it. Any particular questions at this point? I'm about to jump into some demos. Yeah.
When we were doing a game, one thing we were trying to do was, can you switch from DGA mode to like an extra memory mode on the fly in the middle of the game?
Absolutely. All you have to do is set another video mode. If you wanted to go to the exact same video mode but ex-shared memory, you'd set the same width and height, but instead of specifying full screen in the flags passed to video mode, SDL set video mode, you just leave it zero. So, and that just sets another video mode, but it's in a window instead of DGA. Yeah?
A lot of people use the SDL.
Ah, I'm glad you asked. The latest version of SDL... pardon me?
Will it be able to interface with
it? Absolutely. The latest stable version... SDL split into stable versions and development versions, very much like the Linux kernel. The latest stable version is 0.8.11, and it's showing its age. The latest development version is 0.9.13, and as soon as I update the documentation, that'll become the next stable version. And that has support for... transparently writing to the ESD library. So your games or applications can run under GNOME with no problem. Apparently there's another daemon very similar to that for KDE, but I don't know if there's a library interface for that. Yeah?
A lot of games are like featuring 3D hardware acceleration and all that. Mm-hmm.
There are a couple of people who are doing that. SDL doesn't really have a GLUT interface or anything. It may at some point, depending on the way things go. But most people are using SDL for sound and for data loading, and using Mesa for 3D. And I think that's probably the way to go. At some point, I might add a GLX interface of some kind so that you can get events using the SDL APIs. But I think right now the way to go is just definitely go with Mesa. Any other questions? Okay, I'm going to take a break and let's do some fun stuff. You've seen the APIs. Here's some of the things you can do with them. One of the things that are featured well in the SDL environment are demo effects. And I'll show you some of them now. You can run them in a window or full screen. And if SDL can't provide a full screen environment for you, it'll drop back to a window transparently, and so that your game will run under any circumstances. So some of the effects are that people have written. These are things that I haven't written. These are just things that I've ported or other people have ported or written natively for SDL. You know, voxel landscapes. You can use this sort of thing for a flight simulator. Somebody ported one of the popular flight simulators to SDL a while back, but I don't think it was maintained, and the flight simulator has since gone through a couple of revisions. Pardon me? Yeah, I think that's the one. Yeah, I hadn't actually seen it. A lot of times people write applications for SDL and don't even tell me about it. I find it, you know, somebody else tells me about it or I find it on the web. It's kind of cool, actually. It means that I've done a good job. Okay. One of the things fixed in the latest version of SDL is a mouse cursor. previous versions on full screen mode didn't properly, you'd have mouse flicker. But I've used some kind of clever tricks to make sure that it's flicker free. Come on back. OK, some more effects. I'm going to run these in a window so that you can see, you know, how CPU intensive they are by running more than one at once. This is a little hack. Normally, to run in DGA mode, you need to be root. If you're sort of a hardcore person on a single user system, you can give access to DevMem and allow trusted users to use it. I have DevMem. It's in the demos group. The demos group can read and write to it. Now this is a real security issue. Don't ever give this to anyone who you don't want to have root, because anyone who has read-write access to your system can do anything they want. But anyway, these are the default settings on a system. Let's see what else we got. Warp. Many of you will recognize this from the GGI library. Emmanuel Marty gave me permission to port it to SDL, and it runs as fast or faster on SDL as it did on GGI. Water is a really cool one. I'll save that for later. Flares. What else we got here? For those of you who are interested, this is a Pentium 266 laptop running in 16-bit mode. Pretty much all of these demos are running in 8-bit mode. SDL is doing dynamic conversion on them to make sure that they look proper. You'll see it's starting to slow down a little bit. Let's see which one's most CPU intensive here. Probably the Dahua Fire. Yep. And this warp demo, you can run that on any bitmap. I'll show you an example. Loki, we're doing the port of Myth 2, and I just wrote up some artwork for, shows you the frames per second. That's not a feature of SDL, that's a feature of the demo that was ported. Loki just finished porting the Myth 2 Soulblader to Linux, and I was working on some of the artwork for the splash screen. And this isn't going to be the final splash screen, but here's kind of an interesting demo. The static image looks pretty much like that, but you can warp it. You can do anything you want. Now, you'll see the speed difference between this running in a window and this running on full screen. Linux 2.2 kernel has support for the memory type range register, which combines multiple video writes into bursting mode so that, you know, you're not accessing the PCI bus for each pixel. And you'll see some dramatic improvements if you enable that in your kernel and then run SDL applications on top of that. I don't believe I'm actually running the 2.2 kernel. So you'll see here without the memory type range register optimizations. It's another feature of X, security. Don't do this on a network. And you'll see it's pretty much the same speed. If you enable memory type range registers, it actually runs a little bit faster in full screen mode. Let's see what else. Galaxy. Galaxy's a cool one. This is features motion blurring. So you can do your Star Trek Final Frontier kind of thing. Tunnel's an old standard. Oh, that's another feature of SDL. By default, it'll provide a signal handler. So if your application fails for some reason, it'll catch the signal and gracefully exit your application. Well, gracefully meaning it'll reset video modes. Doesn't always work. For example, if you set your own signal handler for SIGSEGV, SDL will respect that. By default, if something happens, SDL will clean up at least its portion of your application. Now, oh yeah. Everyone's seen that. This is kind of cool because it's there's a version that does freeform rotation, and I'll show you that in a second. All of these demos are available in the SDL example library. You can download it along with the SDL library and just build the applications. There's a lot of other things in there, TrueType font support, this really ugly GUI library that I don't recommend you use, but it's kind of interesting. There's an example cross-platform network library. SDL doesn't provide networking, but it does. A lot of people have asked for it, so I've just stuck it in the demo so you can see how it can be done. A lot of other stuff. More effects. You can use SDL in interaction to X applications, like Tickle, GTK. If you wanted to integrate menu bars with your SDL applications, you can do that. SDL doesn't provide a specific API to get to the X Windows or X Window Manager, but it does provide Window Manager hook functions. And that's sort of a specialized API, which is platform dependent, that allows you to get at, you know, the SDL internals. On X11, it gives you the display, you know, the window, everything you need to muck with the window manager, set your icons, you know, whatever. And that's in the appendix in the talk. Let's see. Some of you have heard of Prometheus True Color. It's a very popular demo coding API. I just wrote a quick wrapper for SDL. It runs as faster on SDL as on the original Prometheus True Color. I don't widely talk about it because the difference isn't that amazing, but, you know, it's kind of cool. Let's see, what was I doing? Oh, yeah. Here's another Star Trek thing. You can implement your wormhole. Okay, so that's sort of a good example of sort of the demo effects kind of things that you can do. There's a lot more to the API. At the very end, I'm going to show you some of the games that we've written using the SDL APIs. Let me go on. Because Loki Entertainment is a porting company, I put together a small demo of porting an application from DirectX under Windows to the SDL API, and you can see it running, one of the DirectDraw demos running on Linux. And let me show you sort of the original application, and I'm not going to boot into Windows for this. There you go, space donuts. I should redo the graphic for this to say a Linux sample application, but you know, hey. And you know, it's your asteroid type game. Up at the top, you see the frames per second. The original DirectDraw implementation used accelerated rectangle flip, blitting, and a flip. SDL does provide double buffering via the flip API, but it's not supported on a lot of environments, so it's usually emulated by a complete surface update. So there you go. You see, it's running at reasonable frame rate for an asteroid type game. And here's sort of some of the coding process that went into that. This is not available online. This is special to this talk. Future versions of the talk, if you ever want to come see it again, I'm sure I'll have it a lot more polished. And there will also be a tutorial on writing a game from scratch using SDL. But here's a sample I'm porting. First thing to do, once you get the source code, is make sure it can compile. That's often some of the hardest part, getting rid of all the Windows API references and making sure that it compiles to the link stage on Linux. First thing we did was created a makefile. And I'm using the SDL GNU make format. SDL provides a GNU make makefile, which you can just plug in a couple values and it'll build everything properly on all supported platforms, except Mac OS. Their Mac make looks differently. So we've got the original Win32 source you see on the left-hand side and the modified Linux source. Up at the top, you see some of the things that I did to make compiling go much easier. The Boolean data type has been replaced with an enumeration. DWORD is really an int. It's actually long, but if you port your application to the alpha, that'll break. So I define it as an int, which is 32 bits. You see the Windows code does first it scans the command line. Then it initializes the application, initializes the game, and runs the standard Windows message loop. Peaks message, and then translates it, and lets Windows call your event callback function. The SDL version is a little bit similar, but as you can see, the Linux code is a lot simpler, a lot shorter. Just initialize the game, start your frame time, and update the frames. Inside update frame, there's a call to the SDL event functions, and that'll just check for keys, the key state, and check for quit events. So once you've got it compiling, you mean here?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, the standard declaration for main is int main. Everybody knows. Unfortunately, when you're compiling for Visual C++ and you want to run your application both as a console application and a graphical application, you need to do a little bit of magic because the Win32 environment expects a win main instead of a main. So the SDL headers, sdlmangle.h, you don't ever want to look at that. That's nasty macro code. Defines main to be run main. And runs its own version of main on platforms like macOS and Win32 that don't support main. Okay, so once you've got it compiling, you know, it goes to the link stage, but you can't actually do anything with it. The next thing you do is you identify the major subsystems. In this particular case, this application uses sound and video. So we're just going to rip out DirectDraw and DirectSound and replace it with SDL's graphics and SDL's sound. In this case, I was lazy. I used the example mixer. But if I wanted to get the complete functionality of the DirectDraw version or DirectX version, I would write a mixer that supported panning. You know, just, you know, you have a stereo output, and as your object moves from side to side across the screen, it raises and lowers the volume of each speaker. And if you're interested in the SDL stereo audio format, let me know. It's documented in the header file sdlaudio.h. So that's the plan. Let's see how the graphics code worked out. As often happens when porting Win32 code to STL, it got a lot simpler. Here's a direct draw stuff. It's really hairy. Query interface. They're doing C++ operations on C objects. Setting the video mode. Setting up the flipping surface. Creating a surface for each individual object. Finally initializing sound and starting the game. The STL version, I set the video mode. Initialize STL, I set the video mode. Then I just load the artwork to a surface, convert it to this display format for speed, and just set the offsets. You know, you don't need to create a separate surface for each individual object. You can load a giant graphic and then blit from offsets within that graphic. One of the advantages to loading each graphic to an individual surface is you can set the color key with RLE acceleration. It's not really run. RLE acceleration, it really stands for run length encoding. And it's not exactly a run length encoding scheme. It actually compiles the color key sprite into a series of opcodes and pixels, which is a lot faster than comparing each pixel to the color key value and blitting it if it's not a color key. So anyway, if you wanted to do that, you could load each object to an individual surface and then set the color key on each one with the RLE flag. And that would be one optimization you could do. But, you know, pretty simple. Initializes the sound, starts the game. Okay, at that point, it worked. It wasn't very pretty. It had lots of extra code, but it worked. One of the things that I did afterwards was polished it. You know, I removed unused code. STL doesn't provide a way for you to use menus. If you want to use menus, I suggest integrating GTK with an STL window. So I just removed all that stuff. And added Linux features. STL has functions for setting the title bar. You know, on environments that don't have a title bar, it's an OOP. But you can set the icon, too, for your window manager. You have to set the icon before you set the video mode, because a lot of window managers only respect the icon when your window first pops up. So, you know, a little Linux customization there. And then optimization. Under DirectX, fillrect is an accelerated function. Under DGA, there's no accelerated filling function. You have to do a memcopy to fill the memory, the video memory, to a certain color. So I looked at the game and saw that, you know, it's not updating the whole screen every frame. It's just updating certain portions, you know, that have changed. So I went from the original code, which you just saw running, from fillrect and flip, to a more complicated scheme of dirty rectangles. And what I do instead of erasing the whole screen is I just fill the portion of the screen that had the original sprite. And then I blit the new sprite. It was a little bit more complicated by the fact that they have doubly linked lists and don't initialize all the values. So I had some bugs to track down. But the improvement with this scheme was pretty substantial. Check out the frame rate. You know, it starts to slow down a little bit as you get more objects on. You know, but it's still pretty high. So, you know, just by careful analysis of the sources that you're porting, you can get tremendous speed ups. And I was telling you earlier that STL provides a way to get at the information of the window manager. Here's how to do that. And here's a whole list of functions on getting the screen size, if you want to set your window to the size of the display, iconifying your window. It's a whole bunch of stuff here. if you see it's not, it's platform dependent, but it's also a platform independent API. So like under Windows, you can get access to the GDC, or the HDC, sorry, for if you want to do some weird stuff. SDL also provides special hooks to the window manager events. So, you know, say you want to get functions that aren't supported by the SDL API, like cut and paste. You can actually go into set your hook function to receive those events and respond to X protocol cut, paste, Win32 cut and paste. In the SDL demos, I implemented those for pictures and text, so you can cut and paste pictures between SDL applications. But that's not part of the core API. And you can look at this at your leisure. Use it if you want. It's free code. And that concludes the text portion of my talk. Does anyone have any questions? There's a lot that isn't covered. SDL is simple. You know, you don't have to use very much of it, but there's also a lot of power there, a lot of features. Anyone have any questions? Yeah?
Quick question.
Sure.
More on the sound. Is it possible to have dual sound cards?
There is, but SDL doesn't support more than one monitor or more than one sound card. That's a pretty severe limitation, so after 1.0 gets out, I'm going to address that. Any other questions? Yeah?
Do you have anything to manage the timing of sound cards?
No, that's a good question. The callback is called once per fragment. I'll sort of backtrack a little bit. When you're writing to the audio card, you specify the fragment size, which is the number of samples per fragment. So and that's sort of related to time, because the frequency of the sound card determines the rate at which your data stream flows. So if you have, say, a 512 byte or 512 sample fragment size, every 512 over 22050 or whatever of a second, your callback gets called. So whenever your callback is called, you can count on that as being accurate timing. If you want to do sub-fragment precision, you can use the get ticks to calculate how far into the fragment your audio is being done. SDL calls your callback one fragment ahead. So while one fragment is being played, the other fragment is being filled by your callback. Does that answer your question? Okay. MicMod is ported to SDL. Yeah?
Mm-hmm. What, you know, you're porting these games, just out of curiosity, how close is it to the, you know, tie into the Win32 API? Like, how much do you have to rip out of the new writing?
Depends a lot on the game. A lot of game producers, programmers, don't actually use very many Windows APIs. Some games use MFC, some use, you know, write all their own routines. It depends. Mike over here is working on the fear editor for Myth 2, and that's
done.
Oh yeah, done. That's the complete MFC application. He rewrote it using GTK. In general, you can't really map MFC to SDL directly. You have to rip it out. If I'm evaluating code, I tend not to.
Is there anything that would do a similar job for MFC application, like a layer that could be used to port Twine?
There's also the Willows Labs has a toolkit called Twine, which is a Win32 API, so you can compile MFC applications on Linux.
Twine is more about Win32 API, but I mean MFC.
Yes, you can take MFC and build it on top of Twine.
But okay. But I was thinking more like
sort of a Unix way to do that.
Generally also use a lot of Windows APIs directly. So there really isn't that much point in trying to put together an MFC on top of GTK or Qt.
They're also usually a lot slower than GTK or Qt applications, just because of the overhead. Maybe not a lot slower, a bit slower. Any other questions? Okay, some of you are like nodding your head, some of you are glazed. I kind of expected that. Let me demo some of the games that we ported. Loki Entertainment has done Civilization Call to Power. That's in stores now. You can go down to CompUSA or, well, maybe not around here. but you can go to stores or you can order it online from www.lokigames.com. And we're currently working on four titles actually. The fourth one was leaked recently. We're working on Railroad Tycoon 2, which is just about to reach beta. We're working on Myth 2, which is actually done pretty much. We just have to get the final level editor stuff worked out and ship it. We're working on Eric's Ultimate Solitaire, which is a Macintosh card game being rewritten in GTK. It actually looks really nice with the GTK themes, I have to say. We're also working on Heretic 2, the client port. That's being done using the Glide drivers. I've installed some of the games on here, and I'll start with Civilization Call to Power. Really? Okay. The person who's working on it is working remotely. Now, I don't know how many of you have seen this. It's very much like the older Civilization games in terms of the idea behind the game. It's been approved by Activision. Some say, it's different. And I don't have the videos, but the game comes with some cutscenes and some opening videos. And this is using SDL. Notice the smooth mouse cursor. That's the SDL event thread. All of the dialogues are written in code that it's dynamically loaded from disk. It's sort of, they've got text files that describe the dialogues and so forth. The sound is using SDL audio. This is a 16-bit application. If your application runs in 16-bit and the window manager is running in 8-bit, which sometimes happens, SDL will try to map the 16-bit colors to the 8-bit colors. Doesn't usually do a good job, but at least your application will run, which is a lot more than can be said for some other operating systems. Okay, here we go. I've got my civilization here. I'm blue. It's the Romans. And I've got a bunch of cities. Building some roads over here. I'm in an uneasy peace treaty with the purple guys. what's happening for this turn? Ooh. Okay, what's wrong with Ellenwood? Oh, they're unhappy because we're in war. Oh, no problem. I'll just, entertainers. That'll do it. Let's see. Oh. The city I was building, I don't remember what I was building, but I need to update the queue. Let's see, what do I want? I have, actually. Yeah, it's a well-done game. How about a ship of the line?
Construction started.
Are you guys supporting a Team Fortress? I heard, I think a red side.
Anything besides the ports that I just mentioned are rumors.
Okay.
I don't actually know of any plans for Team Fortress, okay. But I don't know.
I think you mean Team Fortress 2.
Yeah.
And so you can go and do diplomacy with the other civilizations. There's a full library of objects in the game. It's been a while since I demoed this. You can set your unit readiness, your strength, change what you're working on. You can see there's a lot of different stuff. Aliens, bureaucracy, all of that. Make your cannons. You've got different terrain improvements. Hello? Oh, mountains, jungle, tile improvements. Anyway, it's a lot of fun. It's definitely not your action game, but it's got multiplayer internet support. You can play with Windows users using the latest patch. Yeah, this is pretty much it. Let me see what happens next turn.
Building complete.
I will try.
Let's go attack these guys. Take that. Bye-bye. I know. Maybe this will be a fairer fight. Oh, I can't get there next turn. If I had the CD in, I didn't have the movies installed because I don't have space, but I could show you some of the little cutscenes.
Building complete.
And all the different sounds are different events in the game. A lot of different units. You have tanks, aircraft, space paradrop units. You develop your civilization all the way from, you know, hunters gatherers to, you know, space age. There's trade. There's diplomacy. There's all kinds of stuff. Okay. Usually not. Usually it's pretty easy to port the graphics loaders and so forth. Once you get the frame buffer up, most games will already have the renderers already written. There's a lot of polishing that goes on, a lot of porting, but usually the data files don't have to be modified much.
The one area of hell is cutscene. Since most Windows and Mac developers use proprietary codecs for their videos.
Smacker's a big one.
Yes, Smacker. And then they give you, you know, the source, what they consider the source, and that's QuickTime. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. We've sort of standardized on MPEG because we get fairly decent playback on Pentium 2 class systems. Let's see. I'll do a demo of Myth. Oh, no, I won't. I didn't have enough disk space for full install, and I don't have power over here. So, I'll play Railroad Tycoon 2 for you. Yeah, it is, actually. You can Alt-Tab over. Yeah, whatever. It's using the CD-ROM for sound. If you're running as root, or if you have the permissions of dev MEM set up properly, you can actually switch dynamically from full screen to windowed mode. Full screen is a little bit faster. Not by much, though. The X486 drivers do a really good job of using the accelerator to accelerate BLIT operations. So the window code is often, you know, if not as fast, a little bit faster. And you can't change the options until you actually get into the game. Provides multiplayer network support. Looking for CV. Didn't find any. IPX isn't supported. May not be supported on Linux, even though Linux does support IPX. Modem serial support aren't done. It's not clear yet whether they will be in the final group. It's got a whole bunch of different campaigns. A lot of historically accurate things, good maps.
Not a lot of information to work with. Yeah, but that's usually the way the government likes it during wartime. All we know is the U.S. and Canadian governments want a direct line from Seattle to Fairbanks. That's in Alaska, son. And by the way, they're fidgeting.
I just hit the mouse. It escapes out of it. Okay, so while that's loading, it takes a little while. Are there any questions that I can answer? Anything at all? Oh, that's fast. There's an optimized version. It's a little bit faster than the keyboard. I can't alt-tab out of here. Thank you. I wish I could have demoed Myth 2. Myth 2 is a 3D, sort of 3D rendered perspective action game where you control a bunch of units and go around giving people. It's kind of fun. So load, create track, go and check your finances. Check your stocks. This rendering engine allows you to change your perspective. So anyway, I haven't played the game a lot, so I don't know if there's advanced features. Okay, so there you have it. There's STL, the API, some things you can do with it. Go forth and multiply. That's it.